Live Creative Now, episode 68.
Welcome to Live Creative Now with Melissa Dinwiddie, a weekly podcast to inspire you to create your art and share your work, because that's how you will change the world.
Hello, hello, hello. I am Melissa Dinwiddie, passion pluralite artist, happiness catalyst, and creativity instigator, here to address all your questions about living a full-color creative life. Whether you think of yourself as not artistic, not creative, or you think of yourself as an artist of any kind, or anything in between, no matter how you define yourself, feeding your creative hungers makes you feel more alive. And it's how you change the world. Before we get on to today's episode, I wanted to let you know that I have got one spot left in my upcoming Create and Incubate retreat, which runs August 17th through 21st. It is 5 days and 4 nights of uninterrupted create time and time to hang with me and ask me any questions you have over breakfast, lunch, and dinner. It's a very intimate group. There's going to just be 8 of us. So it's a really unprecedented opportunity to spend time with me and with some of the most generous, warm-hearted creatives I know. It's going to be a fantastic group. It always is a fantastic group. You get to work on whatever creative project you wish at your very own dedicated space in our very own dedicated workroom, which we call the incubator for the duration of the retreat. The only exception is if you are working with solvents, because I am sensitive to solvents. That won't work in that room, but I have had people attend who have done oil painting plein air for the whole 5 days, and there's lots of lovely, lovely things to paint because the setting is really lovely. There's a duck pond and a swimming pool, a labyrinth to walk, and miles of hiking trails, and you will stay in a charming cottage, and all the meals are provided. So there's no cooking, no cleaning, no laundry, no carpools, no commuting, none of the day-to-day stuff. It's just pure create time, pure blissful create time. And there will be lots of laughter. That's one thing I can guarantee. So if that last spot has your name on it, just go to createandincubateretreat.com to grab it before someone else does, because the retreat is coming up in just a few weeks. Again, that's createandincubateretreat.com. My last episode, episode 67, was a dialogue. I shared a conversation that I had with a fellow artist and instigator named Christine Martell, just like the famous house in Game of Thrones. If you, like me, are a Game of Thrones watcher and reader and obsessor. I just finished the last episode of season 6 of the TV series, and I've read all the books, and yeah, I'm pretty obsessed with Game of Thrones. Anyway, Christine Martell, who is not of the Game of Thrones Martells, she lives in Oregon, and she built a 9-foot-long robotic dinosaur, or as she calls him, an artosaur, who acts as a quote, wild advocate for the arts. And you can listen to our conversation by going to livecreativenow.com/067, or just finding it on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you are listening. Today's episode, episode 68, is all about imperfectionism. So if you have been following me for any time at all, you know that I am a self-declared imperfectionist. I would call myself a card-carrying imperfectionist, except that I've never actually made a card to carry, but that would be a fun thing to remedy. Anyway, imperfectionism is a foundational concept when it comes to living a full color creative life. But what does that mean exactly? I get a lot of confusion from people who really misunderstand what imperfectionism means. They think that it means sloppiness, or that it means settling for less than what you're capable of, settling for mediocrity, things like that. But imperfectionism is not any of those things. And I want to set the record straight about what imperfectionism is, because it is so, so incredibly important to living a full color life. And it has made such an enormous difference in my own life. And the other day, I wrote a blog post about it, but it was very specifically aimed at my calligraphy readers, readers who are specifically interested in calligraphy, which is something that I've done for over 20 years now. And I have a separate list just for people who are interested in calligraphy, and I'm developing more calligraphy-related content and will be coming out with, down the road, some courses and things like that to teach people how to do different styles of calligraphy and things. In any case, I wrote a blog post about imperfectionism specifically aimed at my calligraphy readers because I honestly hadn't been doing a whole lot of calligraphy for a number of years. And I started up again just a couple months ago, and I've really been struck by how much calligraphy brings out my perfectionist gremlins. And, you know, I believe, but this is so beyond a belief. This is just rock solid truth. The reason that I'm able to approach calligraphy again and share it on my Instagram feed and on Facebook and on Twitter, the reason that I'm able to do that without becoming completely frozen and mired in perfectionist paralysis is because I've been practicing intentional imperfectionism for the past few years. It's made an enormous difference for me. So I figured that I know, having taught calligraphy for years around the country, that I'm not alone in calligraphy bringing out perfectionism. So I figured that the calligraphers in my audience could probably use a lesson in imperfectionism. But of course, perfectionism and perfectionist paralysis don't just hit calligraphers. They hit all of us. So today I thought that I would share what I wrote in that blog post. I would share it on the podcast. If you want to see the original blog post, you can go to melissadinwiddie.com/frustrated-calligraphy. That's melissadinwiddie.com/frustrated-calligraphy. So I will probably veer off the script, as it were, but I'm going to be sharing essentially what I wrote in that blog post. And I started by asking the reader, do you ever feel frustrated with your lettering? Do you ever feel like it's just never going to be as good as you want it to be? And I can tell you that that is the story of my life. And as I just said, and as I was sharing in my Creative Sandbox community just in this past week, nothing brings out my perfectionist gremlins like calligraphy. It's amazing. And I think it's because creating letters to appear a certain way, to adhere to sort of the rules of a certain style or certain alphabet or script, letters are very precise. They're these small, precise forms. And, you know, there are millions of typefaces out there that you can find online, and you can see the difference. And the difference is sometimes, you know, just micro, when you're doing hand lettering, even if you're writing fairly large, a half a millimeter in one direction or the other could completely throw everything off. So, and also the other thing is when you are learning calligraphy, you're usually looking at an exemplar. You're looking at somebody else's lettering, like the best examples of every single letter in the alphabet and character in the script. And you're doing your best to mimic that exactly. And any variation away from the exemplar feels like it's wrong. So, you know, it's not a big surprise that calligraphers tend to get sucked into perfectionism. But here is the thing that I want you to remember. And I'm saying this because I need to remember it all the time. Yes, precision is great. And yes, mastery and excellence are awesome to aim for. And I continually aim for mastery and excellence. But precision and mastery and excellence and technical meticulousness or whatever, they are not everything. They are not everything. I mean, why do we do our creative things? We do them because they feed us in some way, and hopefully it's fun, right? I mean, if you're not having fun, what's the point? I remember years ago when I was finally getting back to dance after I'd been injured, unable to really dance for many years, and I was finally getting back into it. I was in my mid-20s, and I started taking classes regularly at a friend's studio. She had opened her own studio in Oakland, California. And I actually lived across the bay. I lived about 45 minutes to an hour or more away at that time. But I was driving a couple times a week to go take classes at her studio. And she actually told me that she would love to have me in her dance company that she was forming, but I would have to come more frequently. I would have to come, you know, like I don't remember how many times a week, but I think it was like 3 or 4 times a week instead of once or twice a week. So for a while I did, because I really wanted to perform with her company. But then one day I was in class and we had gone through the warm-up and we're at the section of class where everybody goes to one side of the room, and then one at a time we cross the room in whatever pattern or sequence, you know, of movements that the teacher has modeled for us. And I got to the other side of the room and I realized I am not having fun, because it had become all about getting good. It wasn't about enjoying dancing. It was about being good at it, getting really good at it. And I quit. I went home that day and I quit for a while. I needed to just back off, because I realized if I'm not having fun, what's the point? Now, part of what makes it fun for me, and this may be true for you, part of what makes it fun is the challenge. I often think, gosh, I wish I just could be good at this thing. But in reality, when I look at the things that I'm drawn to, I'm drawn to things that are challenging. And if it's too easy, then there's no sense of satisfaction. And I'm going to talk about something on the other side of the spectrum, not on my creative passion side, but on the technical side of things. Every website that I have right now, I have built myself. And I am not naturally interested or good at technical stuff. I have figured out things as I've needed to, you know, out of necessity, but it's not the thing that I'm drawn to. And every time I have some issue with one of my websites, I feel like I'm just beating my head against a wall, because it's like, I don't get it. I can't figure it out. It's so frustrating. I like tearing out my hair, not really, but it, you know, metaphorically, gnashing my teeth and so incredibly frustrated. And when I finally figure it out, oh my God, the sense of satisfaction is amazing. It is, I have so much more pride and satisfaction when I manage to push through a really hard technical challenge than if it's something super easy, right? So effort is part of the equation for me in the having fun piece. And perhaps it is for you. I know Mihai Csikszentmihalyi's book on flow, called his book called Flow. He did tons of research on that state of flow. And the flow state is when we are actually right at the edge of our abilities. This is when human beings are happiest, when we are fully focused and concentrated right at the edge of our abilities. So effort is absolutely part of the equation for fun and happiness when we're pursuing something like a creative passion. However, sometimes it feels like when I was in that dance class, it feels like it's all effort and no payoff. And if the effort doesn't also incorporate some joy, then, you know, what's the point? Forget it. Because, as I like to say, the purpose is joy. The purpose is joy. And I try to always keep this front of mind. Now, my gremlins still creep in. And even when I am in the creative sandbox, intentionally focusing on process, not product, which is Creative Sandbox Manifesto rule number 2, when I am intentionally in the space of there is no wrong, which is Creative Sandbox Manifesto rule number 1, even when I'm in that space, my gremlins creep in and they tell me that it isn't good enough every single time. And when I share my calligraphy, they go nuts. Every time I share my calligraphy. Oh my God. And, you know, because I can see my gremlins, all that they can see is, you know, the little wobble, the imperfect counter shape, whatever. That's all I can see practically when I share my calligraphy, when I click that publish button to send it to Instagram and Facebook and Twitter and wherever else. And I'm just thinking, oh my God, people are going to look at that and they're going to think, she is not very good. I don't know what she thinks she's doing. You know, she's such a hack or, you know, whatever. This is what my gremlins say. But I keep sharing. So why, you might be asking, why do I keep at it if my gremlins harangue me every time I share my calligraphy? Now, it does happen with my other art and with my blog posts, and believe me, with my podcasts. It happens with pretty much everything I create. Oh, my music, when I haven't made music in a while, but when I do and when I share it online, my gremlins tell me it's crap every single time. But it especially comes out when I share my calligraphy. So why do we keep at it? Well, the reason that I keep at it is because I have a practice of intentional imperfectionism. Now, as I said earlier, this does not mean sloppiness. Intentional imperfectionism does not mean settling for mediocrity. It may sound like that to you, but that is not at all what imperfectionism means. Imperfectionism is simply the practice of acknowledging and accepting that I am human and forgiving myself for being human while I also strive to improve. So, yes, I accept that I am not the greatest in the world at this by any stretch of the imagination. I am not a master yet. I have not yet achieved even close to the excellence that I desire. I accept that. And I allow myself to enjoy where I am right now in this present time, imperfect spot, while at the same time, I am also aiming and striving and working to be better. So this is a pretty delicate balance, and it's one that I only started to come to, I think, in my late 30s when I started studying jazz singing. So I want to tell you a little story, because 10 years before I started jazz singing, I started singing jazz in, I think I was 38, and 10 years before that, when I was 28, I just started diving into calligraphy. And oh my God, it pained me so deeply that I wasn't as good as my heroes. And I literally would sit on the floor and leaf through the pages of Letter Arts Review, which is the premier journal for calligraphy and the lettering arts. And I would weep because I knew that I would never be as good as my heroes whose work was, you know, published inside those pages. Oh my God, it was so painful. It was so, so miserable. But then a decade later, when I signed up for my first jazz vocal solo class at the local community college, I guarantee you, I felt just as eager to get good at jazz singing as I had to, you know, as I had as a newbie calligrapher. I felt just as, I don't know, even desperate is the right word. I so, so, so badly wanted to get good at this thing. Same thing when I started calligraphy, I so, so badly wanted to get good at it. But when I started jazz singing, this time there was a huge difference because I was able to actually enjoy where I was in the process. It wasn't just painful anymore. And that made such a huge difference. Now, I still experienced a lot of frustration as I climbed the learning curve and I, you know, developed my skills slowly over time. It felt like it just took forever. But this time, I didn't torment myself for not being a savant, which I definitely did when I started doing calligraphy. I really felt like, I remember one time my teacher was out at my weekly calligraphy class. The teacher was not there and we had a substitute, and she was not much older than I was. And she'd been doing calligraphy for 8 years, and she was so good. And I mean, this woman was, I think she was kind of a natural, and she started off sort of a step ahead of a lot of beginners, but she'd been doing it for 8 years. So, and I just started. And I remember thinking, oh, I want my calligraphy to look like I've been doing it for 8 years, and I want that right now. And I really kind of beat myself up for not being an instant genius, like not being born with a calligraphy pen in my hand, basically. I caused myself a lot of pain. I kind of had this belief that I should just be naturally amazing at this thing. I knew that was ridiculous, but I wanted that. This time, 10 years later, when I started singing jazz, was different because I was able to treat myself kindly and gently. And here's the secret. Imperfectionism is actually the exact same thing as self-compassion. There's no difference between imperfectionism and self-compassion. Imperfectionism is learning to stop beating yourself up and to love yourself up instead. As I always like to say, don't beat yourself up, love yourself up. When I share my imperfect work, and everything I share, of course, is imperfect because I'm incapable of perfection because I'm a human being. When I share my imperfect work, and with calligraphy, I'm aware, like painfully aware of how imperfect it is, even more than all the other things, ways that I create. When I share that imperfect work, that is the practice of imperfectionism at work. And it's very powerful. When I share my work and those gremlins come out in force and they tell me, oh my God, that sucks. Who do you think you are? People are going to laugh at you. And all the things that they say makes me want to run and hide. But my practice is to embrace the vulnerability and share anyway. Scary, really, really scary. But let me tell you, the more accustomed I become to sharing my imperfect work, regardless of what anyone else might say or think, the more empowered I become. The more I am able to create for me, for the joy of it, instead of in an attempt to impress others and to get validation that I'm okay. And yes, that's what sharing was for me for a long time. I admit it. It was an attempt to impress. I felt like, and I don't even know if I could have articulated this, but it absolutely is true that I felt like if I could just share awesomeness, you know, the best that I'm capable of, if I could impress people, then that would prove that I'm enough, that I'm worthy. And let me tell you, that is a trap because nobody else can make you feel worthy. And I know it's easy to say this. It's a lot harder to integrate it into your life, but you have to own it for yourself. You have to own it for yourself. And until you own your enoughness, trying to get it from other people is like trying to fill a bottomless pit. It's never going to happen. Now, it is true that when people reflect back that they like something that you've created or they're impressed with something or whatever, that can help you see your work through their eyes and appreciate it better. And it can affect how you feel about your work and your own worthiness. But ultimately, you have to own it yourself. Otherwise, it's what the co-counseling community that I'm in would refer to as a frozen need. It's never going to get filled. On the other hand, here's what my experience is. Practicing imperfectionism is almost like growing a suit of armor. Because when I can forgive myself for being human, when I can accept myself as I am instead of how I wish to be, and when I can love myself up instead of beating myself up, then what happens is what anyone else might think of me and my work just doesn't have the same kind of hold on me because I have the security in myself that I'm okay. Even if my skills aren't up to the level that I want them to be, right? This is really magical. When I can forgive myself for being human, when I can accept myself as I am, when I can love myself up instead of beating myself up, what other people think about me doesn't have the same kind of grip. I wish so much that I had figured this out earlier in my life. My God, I wish that I'd been taught to practice imperfectionism in school. And really, it's something that, oh God, everybody should learn it in school. But nobody taught this stuff back then. And I don't know how many people are teaching it in school nowadays. But the good news is for you and for me is that it's learnable now at whatever age, any age, doesn't matter. All it takes is setting the intention to allow yourself to be imperfect. Oh my God, this took me decades to allow myself to be imperfect. But remember, you get to allow yourself to be imperfect while at the same time you pursue excellence and mastery. You get to do both. I don't know if it's really like a Zen concept, but it seems to, you know, I don't know if that's the correct terminology, but it contains seemingly opposite ideas at the same time. Of course, you want to get good at the things that you love to do. You want to have facility with them. You want to make things that please you. Absolutely. Of course. Of course you do. And you want to impress people. I sure still do. However, we also have to be able to accept and love ourselves as we are in our present time, imperfect state. So when I was studying jazz singing, I remember this was such a huge concept for me because it was such a revelation from my experience when I started doing calligraphy that I was able to enjoy being a beginner. It was frustrating as heck and it drove me up the wall. And at the same time, I was able to enjoy being where I was. So I was able to enjoy being right here in this beginner imperfect place while at the same time heading for and aiming for that place over there where I would have more skills and be able to do more. So that is what I wish for you, is to be able to enjoy and appreciate where you are right now, while at the same time you are aiming for and pursuing the excellence and mastery that you desire. Now, I think one of the most important things to remember here is that you get to practice imperfectionism in your practice of imperfectionism. And because imperfectionism and self-compassion are identical, the same thing, you get to practice self-compassion in your practice of self-compassion. And let me just go over what self-compassion is. Again, I've talked about this before, but it bears repeating. Dr. Kristen Neff, who is the world's foremost authority on self-compassion, divides it into three components. The first component is mindfulness. It's awareness. It's noticing what you're feeling, noticing what's going on, being able to be in present time and step outside of your distress and really see it from the outside. That's mindfulness. The second piece is an awareness of common humanity and understanding that whatever suffering you're experiencing right now from, you know, feeling not as good as you want to be, or from stumbling in some way, or making a mistake, or hurting someone's feeling, or whatever it is that you've done that's made you feel crappy, you are not the only person on the planet who's experienced this. Millions of other people have experienced very similar things. It's not a pathology. There's nothing wrong with you. You are a human being, and you get to forgive yourself for that. And then the third piece of self-compassion is self-kindness. It's taking that mindfulness and that awareness of common humanity and responding to yourself gently and lovingly the way you would with a beloved child or a dear friend. We tend to treat ourselves so harshly, and self-compassion, the practice of self-compassion, is really being intentional about treating yourself with love and kindness. And we slip up in, you know, even people who are card-carrying imperfectionists and with, you know, strong intentions to practice self-compassion, I find myself beating myself up all the time. That is not the problem. I get to be gentle with myself when I notice myself slipping in my practice of self-compassion and imperfectionism, and you do too. So in other words, if you find yourself slipping back into perfectionist habits and you start getting down on yourself and beating yourself up, guess what? You get to notice that. You get to notice, oh, there I am beating myself up again. And you get to forgive yourself. And you get to love yourself up. That is part of the practice. That is the practice. Absolutely. That is the practice of imperfectionism. I am practicing it right alongside you. I really, really hope this helps you as much as it has helped me. I am so imperfect at my practice of imperfectionism, but man, it has made such an enormous difference in my life. So that is what I wish for you. That's it. That's a wrap. Thank you so much for joining me today. If you are getting value out of this podcast, the best way to thank me is to tell your friends. And if you haven't left a review over on iTunes, I would be so, so grateful if you would. You can go to livecreativenow.com/iTunes-review for step-by-step instructions on how to leave a review and a rating over on iTunes. And yeah, those reviews mean so much to me, and I read them. If you are leaving a review from another country, make sure that you let me know. Send me an email or leave me a voicemail over on my website, because I won't see the review if you're leaving it from another country unless you let me know. The way that iTunes works, it doesn't show me the reviews from other countries. It's sort of annoying. Anyway, meanwhile, if you are interested in joining me at my Create and Incubate retreat, go to createandincubateretreat.com. Grab that last available spot, and that's it. Thanks for joining me, and go get creating.
Live creative now. Live creative now.
Subscribe at livecreativenow.com.